D. Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Adam Finnegan, David Janes, intern Emily here with you today. Derek Mason on vacation for the next couple of days as he prepares for his induction into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame this weekend. Willie, you were just showing me your son Mahoney in the stands at the Home Run Derby last night. How was his experience in Atlanta?
I haven't had it. It got done fairly late last night. In my mind, that event still needs to be about 45 to 50 minutes shorter.
How long did it take?
Well, if you count the introductions and the hype, you know, they had, for example, Pat McAfee did kind of a wrestling style, which you would appreciate. Introduction of all eight of the players. They're standing on these big things in the middle of the field for effect. So they say 7 o'clock to start it. The actual first swing that counts is probably more like 7:20, 7:25. And it got done at about 10, I think. I think it was a four-hour presentation. Four-hour, is that right? Did I get that right, or three? Maybe it just seems like four. Either way, I still think it drags a little bit, but it was very good. My son Mahoney went down there. He drove to Atlanta with his buddy. They found tickets online. Pretty reasonable price. I would say the price dropped because there wasn't a lot of hype among the eight players. Like, if you're not a pretty hardcore baseball fan, you'd be hard-pressed to name two of the eight that participated last night. Fair?
I know that Cal Raleigh won and that his nickname is The Big Dumper.
The Big Dumper. And
great nickname.
I would say going into the season, I would bet you very few people knew who Cal Raleigh was.
Myself included.
But he had 38 home runs in the first half, the most a catcher has ever had before the All-Star break. Now, remember, the All-Star break is a little later than it used to be, so he got an extra week. Still, 38 homers is amazing, and he did win it. It was a good event. I watched it more because Mahoney was there, and he has got an unbelievable knack for getting on camera. He and his buddy, they were doing one of those promo things, you know, it's sponsored by this, and they're just doing crowd shots, and sure enough, there they are. He starts getting texts from his friends. I didn't see it live. I was watching. I overlooked it. He said, "Dad, they just said I'm getting texts. I was on. Go back and look." And sure enough, we found it. It's like two or three good hard seconds. His buddy almost caught a fly ball. Their seats that they bought were in foul territory, way away at the top, and they were like, "Of course we're moving down. We're not staying up here. We've got no chance." So he went into the masses. And if you notice, there's some fights for those home run balls. Like, everybody's got a glove. There's aggressive play. There's slots. Like, in front of that chop house, there's like a walkway. People are like running through that walkway and leaping on each other. So I don't know if there were injuries last night, but his buddy got a glove on one of the balls and did not come up with it.
How old is your son?
He is going to be a sophomore in college, so he is about to turn 20.
Okay. What is the age cutoff for fighting over a home run ball?
There apparently was none last night because I saw some older guys going hardcore. It wasn't like, "Hey, give the ball to a kid." Last night, it was not that. It was a free-for-all.
One texter says,
"I think a regular season game and the home run derby are probably different categories."
One texter on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, "I swear, you all want to shorten everything. The home run derby was plenty long. It does not need to be shortened."
That was the sentiment that Mahoney gave me. I was like, "Hey, I wish it was a little bit shorter. It just kind of drags on
TV."
It's
different when you're in person.
He says, "We loved it. The in-game experience was..." I don't like NFL football games, I feel like, drag more when you're there. The TV timeouts, you're just sitting on your hands going, what is going on? Come on, let's get the game going. Whereas at home, you know, you get up, you check your phone, you walk into the other room, you grab something to eat, you talk to somebody. You get your other screen, you get your computer in front of you, or you switch to the red zone. There's all kinds of things you do to kill the time. But when you're at the game, it seems to drag. So I felt, I've never been to a home run derby. It would have been really monotonous to me, but they had a great time. So my favorite part is tonight, the actual All-Star game, but I'm becoming a dinosaur apparently.
Because you think it's crazy that Jacob Mizorowski is going to be in the All-Star game after playing in five games?
You know, he's going to pitch tonight, so there'll be a lot of hype when he goes in there. I don't like that he's on the team, but I would watch no matter what. That's me. I'm the guy that no matter what you do to the game, I'm stupid enough to keep watching and hoping that I see a great All-Star game tonight.
Meanwhile, also in Atlanta, SEC Media Days roll on. Of course, Chase and Big Joe are still there. They'll be on from noon to 3 today. It is Texas Day, Auburn Day, Georgia Day, and Tennessee Day at SEC Media Days. By the way, our SEC Media Days coverage is sponsored by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. But Willie, yesterday we had proof once again that SEC Media Days are fertile ground for rumor mongering. Because yesterday, Greg McElroy, co-host of a radio show with Cole Kubelik.
Yep, who was an excellent guest for Joe and Big Joe and Chase yesterday.
Indeed
Chase
he was. Joe. McElroy and Kubelik host a radio show in Birmingham, Alabama. And as many of you know, Greg McElroy played for Nick Saban at Alabama. And yesterday on their program, I believe during a weekly chat with Paul Feinbaum, who, by the way, was on Robbie and Rex Road earlier today. Excellent interview, excellent story by Joe Rex Road on Paul Feinbaum at The Athletic. If you want to see what Paul Feinbaum looks like with hair, I suggest you read Joe Rex Road's story.
It's good. It's going to take you a while. So, you know, grab a cup of coffee, budget a little bit of time. I didn't budget enough this morning, you know. Got to be here, you know, a little before 9 o'clock now. This is thrown off my schedule, Adam.
Yes, it is.
I didn't get to delve into my morning reading like I normally do. So sorry about that, Joe. I've only read about half the article.
Greg McElroy, I love the way he phrased this. He said, a quote, very much in the know person that I have a lot of respect for and have spent a lot of time around and just really, really admire. That person told Greg McElroy that they don't think Nick Saban is done coaching. Now, here's what happens. Someone like Greg McElroy, who has a big profile SEC media circles, not only is he a co-host of a popular program in Birmingham, he's on SEC Network. You hear that, someone who played for Nick Saban, you hear that, and it spreads like wildfire all around the hotel in Atlanta. So much so that coaches who were speaking yesterday were asked about it, including Lane Kiffin. Here is what Lane Kiffin had to say about the prospect of Nick Saban returning to coaching.
I wouldn't be surprised. I kind of always thought that was going to happen. I kind of thought it happened after 1 year. But I say that just because even seeing recent stuff with him and talking to him on the phone, first of all, I have no knowledge that he's coming back. I don't think anybody does that. He's so sharp still. I almost feel like it's a waste that he's not. No disrespect to the media and what you guys do, but his ability to coach players and change lives in that, and he's so good at it. I just think he'll be back, whether that's NFL or college.
May I just say, first of all, that Lane Kiffin always has an excellent tan. Always has an excellent tan. He comes to SEC Media Days. He's got the shirt unbuttoned a little bit, clearly just off the fishing boat or something like that. Just always an excellent tan for Lane Kiffin. But
I would say, too, the thing that I have grown to appreciate about Kiffin, I do think he's matured and he has found a good niche of being interesting without kind of being unlikable. I thought his early years, he pulled out all the stops. He tried too hard. He was, I think, a little reckless. Saban probably deserve some credit for teaching him some things. But since he's come to Ole Miss, I just couldn't stand him for the longest time. he's likable now. I like hearing him talk. He comes in, he understands what SEC Media Day can be about. He knew what he was saying there was going to get some attention. I heard him give a different version of that same answer on SEC Network in more of a setting. That's the interesting part about these little quotes, a harmless thing. And Paul Feinbaum on Robbie and Rex Road explained the exact origin of how it evolved, the original quote. But it is a great, perfect example of what happens when you have all these hours of airtime and space to fill and how things get twisted around. It is a really compelling thought. Is Nick Saban ever going to contemplate coming back to coach?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Willie, but wasn't part of the reason Nick Saban retired because of the new landscape of college sports?
Yes.
We saw this a lot in college basketball. Jay Wright, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, Jim Larrañaga, they all stepped away because college wasn't what they were used to anymore. And I don't think they wanted to take on the challenge of the new name, image, and likeness world of college sports. So why would that change for Nick Saban? This isn't Bill Belichick, who was effectively fired by the New England Patriots, couldn't get a job in the NFL, and went back to college. Clearly, he wasn't done coaching. So do I actually believe that Nick Saban would return to coaching? No. I think Paul Feinbaum said on the interview he had with Greg McElroy on the Birmingham station, he's in his mid-70s. He's playing golf every day at the best golf courses in Florida. Why would you give that up? He's got a great cushy gig on College Game Day, making a lot of money. Why would you give all of that up to get back into coaching in a world that you seemed to want to leave when you decided to retire? But it, as I said, this is what the SEC Media Days ecosphere produces. Someone like Greg McElroy says something, someone who knows Nick Saban, and apparently knows someone very much in the know who he admires, who he trusts, who thinks that Nick Saban's going to come back to coaching. And it spreads to the point that Lane Kiffin, during his news conference at SEC right. Media Days, gets asked about
Who also knows Nick Saban very, very well. I think it's a long shot that it happens. Kiffin, when I was just happened to be watching the coverage yesterday afternoon, again, in a time slot that I'm not used to watching, 2 o'clock, 1:30, or whatever it was, when we're usually on the air, he said he would think it would be in the NFL if he would do it, take another shot in the NFL. At his age, the realistic slot for that, it's hard to see, and I agree with you that the big question would be, okay, you're willing now to play in this world. Does he think maybe it's settling down a little bit with all of the stuff that you're hearing from Congress and from the NCAA and the clearinghouse and the whatever you call all these things? Lane Kiffin had a lot of interesting things to say yesterday. He still wants a hard salary cap, just like he has from the start. I don't know that that's ever going to happen, but he was mocking whatever he said, whatever this is that we have. You know, what do you call that? What was the decision made? What do you call that group? It's got a weird name. I don't even know, but it's so hard to understand what all of this means. There's a lot of legislation and speculation about now what the collectives can be now. You're not supposed to give money to a player who isn't earning it by doing something business related, verified, like legitimate, which is how it's supposed to be. And the collectives are like laughing, going, wait a minute, you're changing the rules like that? There's no way you're going to stop our, you know, the snowball that's been running down the hill from day one. Nobody's had to do anything to get the money. So how is this all going to work? Still nobody knows. So for Nick Saban to come back, I still don't think it's settled down enough for him to understand what it's going to be. It would still be a mess as he came back in. So I think it's a long shot.
One texter says, Nick didn't like having to recruit the players already on his team, which the GM does for him now and didn't exist in college 3 years ago. Okay. So I don't know if that's stopping him.
There is now a whole layer of infrastructure that takes some of it off of the coach to manage the roster. But I still think that would be a hard thing for Nick Saban to deal with, right? Hey, my GM is saying my backup quarterback is about to leave. You know, that is still going to be a big part of the equation.
Matthew in Nashville foreshadowed where I'm going with this, but do you know what the Adam Vingan maximum chaos choice would be for me if Nick Saban would return to coaching in college?
Well, the maximum chaos would have to be Auburn.
Wouldn't that
be maximum chaos?
I was thinking more LSU.
Back to LSU?
Replacing Brian Kelly, going back to LSU, and as Matthew on our text line said, this has all the makings of Brian Kelly being fired and Nick Saban coming back to LSU to finish his story.
Finish his story?
It's another wrestling reference. Yeah. I won't bore you with the details. But yesterday, Brian Kelly said, quote, "It would be better for college football if Nick Saban is coaching, period. There's nobody better to develop players and certainly build championship programs. It'd be a great day if he was back in it." Now imagine, Brian, if that was at your expense, my friend, and Nick Saban returns to coaching in the SEC at LSU. That would be my vote.
I'm curious, too, just as we talk about this, Nick Saban was front and center in the SEC network coverage last year. Is he not doing that this year?
Yeah, he's not there. I don't know why.
And I found myself last year just glued to everything he was saying. He had tremendous insights. No disrespect to the guys on the panels as they sort of fill time when they're not interviewing somebody or showing somebody on the podium, but the discussion is not nearly the level that it was with Nick Saban. He was a huge mover of the needle and had me watching that stuff way more than I normally do. Because a lot of times they are just literally filling time, and it's hard to figure out what to talk about. But he was finding stuff where I was like, hey, this is good stuff.
By the way, Kirby Smart, who is addressing reporters right now at SEC Network, was asked about this. Of course, a former Nick Saban assistant coach said, quote, "That's not happening. I don't think Nick's coming back. I think he's too happy where he is. I have talked to Nick pretty regularly, and I just don't see it. It's one of those things that if he wanted to, he'd be unbelievable at it."
I hope that they continue to pick his brain on the things that are really important going forward. The shaping, it's probably going to take 5 to 10 years, really, to shape this. And by the time you get that done, more things will change in the world, and you'll have to continue to tweak it. But there's such a seismic shift. People like Nick Saban, I don't know what title, you know, they always throw out the title, the czar. We need a czar of college football. I don't know if you officially can be that, but he's a guy that you should come and get ideas from. And I think he's really good at getting people to have a legit discussion on the football stuff that can help bring some sense into this down the road. And can we get a system that everybody understands the rules? And we know going in there's going to be cheating. People, whatever the rules are, and the SEC is the greatest example of it, show me the rules, I'll show you the SEC will break the rules. They will do it. But that being said, I still think it's better if everybody understands what the rules are. And I think he can help. And another thing that's being discussed a lot is the playoff format. And in particular, whether you have 5 plus 11 or the 4 and the 4, all that stuff. It's what is the selection committee and their criteria looking for? How do you quantify the strength of schedule? That's where Nick Saban, I think, makes a lot of sense. And that's where I think he can help shape things if he's utilized in that way. So I don't know what he wants to do. He's one of these guys that can do anything he wants. Peyton Manning would be one, right? When he was curves over, he could have done anything. If he wanted to do what Tom Brady's doing, he could have done that. If he wanted to coach, could have done that. Wanted to be a GM, probably could have done that. He's chosen this unique thing that he does. So Nick Saban's got those same choices, even though he's older.
615-737-1025. We will continue our discussion on college football. It is SEC Media Days, after all. There is a player who will address reporters today at SEC Media Days, who is the talk of college football. And I have to say, The hype train is out of freaking control. And we will discuss that coming up next, 615-737-1025. This week's Nashville's best deal of the week is Chiba Hut Toasted Subs, with a menu featuring over 30 signature sub sandwiches, as well as a variety of Rice Krispie treats, salads, and munchies. They combine homegrown food with real people in a relaxed environment. Get half off a $40 gift card now at thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last.
Arch Manning is the top quarterback in the SEC. Fact or fiction?
That is fiction. Y'all have been drinking Paul Feinbaum's Kool-Aid for way too long. I have him as the fifth. Let me repeat that. The fifth best quarterback in the SEC. The hype train is out of control. And what are we basing this on? We're basing this on games last year against UTSA, Louisiana Monroe, and Mississippi State, who were 93rd, 103rd, and 118th in the scoring defense in the FBS last year. Look, I love Arch. I think he has a very high floor, but I don't think he's an elite talent when it comes to his arm ability, his ability to manipulate the pocket, to make guys miss, to change his arm angle. I think he's a really good quarterback, but the hype train's out of control.
That was Jordan Rogers on Arch Manning. Texas is at SEC Media Days today. Arch Manning will address reporters. That'll be interesting. But I agree with Jordan Rogers, who, by the way, you mentioned got his start on our station.
Yes, I don't know if he would acknowledge that, but he did. Darren McFarlane and I used to bring him on from time to time, pre-SEC Network, pre-Bachelorette, by the way.
Oh.
So we knew him
old
when.
Old school.
We knew him when. We gave him the building blocks.
So what you're saying is he would not have been on The Bachelor. Was it The Bachelor or The Bachelorette?
I think it was The Bachelorette he was on, I think.
That sounds right.
So he wasn't The Bachelor.
He wasn't the one that all of the women were clamoring for?
I think
for.
He was going out. I think he...
He was going after
the
woman? I think
he went deep into the show.
Okay.
With the...
But what you're saying is...
He was playing in the CFL at the time. He was. He had been Vanderbilt's quarterback on some really good Vanderbilt teams under James Franklin, and he was in the CFL and around Nashville training... and came on a number of times before he launched his career in this direction. So, does he remember us? I don't know.
Out to the BC Lions of the Canadian Football League.
Yes,
that's who.
And I would always say, hey, we're going to be in Vancouver. You know, well, you might see you. I don't know if he remembers who we are. Actually,
he was on season 12 of The Bachelorette.
Bachelorette. Yeah, okay. So as far as I am concerned, if not for you, Willie Donick, Jordan Rogers would not have a career. He would not have been on The Bachelorette, and he would not be all over SEC Network.
Okay, spread the word on that. Let's just go with that. I mean, this is how SEC Week goes, right? With the
it's a fertile ground.
Just get that tweet going. If it wasn't circulated around Atlanta, get it to the people that are there, Chase and Big Joe, and get that circulating.
Absolutely. But let's talk about Arch Manning for a moment, because it is Texas Day at SEC Media Days. It's also Auburn Day, Georgia Day, and Tennessee Day, and we will get to Tennessee in a little bit. But as we know, Willie Donick, quarterbacking is in Arch's blood. He is the grandson of Archie. He is the nephew of Peyton and Eli. The Manning legacy runs through his veins. And Paul Feinbaum, again, who joined Robbie and Rexroad earlier this morning, not only did Paul Feinbaum basically guarantee that Texas will defeat Ohio State in Columbus to open the season, Feinbaum caused quite a stir a couple of weeks ago when he said that Arch Manning is the best college football quarterback since Tim Tebow arrived on the scene nearly 20 years ago. Keep in mind, Arch Manning last season attempted a grand total of 90 passes. And as Jordan Rogers mentioned in that clip, 78 of them came against Mississippi State, Louisiana Monroe, UT San Antonio, and Colorado State. So I know that he's a Manning, and there's going to be a lot of hoopla that surrounds being a part of the Manning bloodline. I think the hype train is a little out of control. What do you think?
I think you have to understand, you are somewhat new to the market. You were not in the market when Peyton and Eli were in the SEC.
That is correct.
That you cannot stop the Manning train. You cannot stop it. It's going. And I think nobody understands that more than the Mannings. They and I think that allows Arch to deal with it. I think he understood it growing up, and I think he'll handle himself okay. That won't keep us from being annoyed from time to time about the hype train, the Manning train, especially at Texas and the expectations that drive that program. So it's going to be great theater, especially right from the get-go, because that's the game in college football to start the season, right? Texas and Ohio State.
Texas at Ohio State, Saturday, August 30th. So about 6 weeks away. Should be an excellent game.
And the beauty of it for both teams, really, is the loser should be fine. As long as it's a good game, The loser will still have plenty of opportunities to make the playoffs. As we found out, well, you know, this is how it should be anyway, but this is the central discussion. Losing a game like that, how much should that affect the committee's decision? Because Lane Kiffin still believes there's way too much, and, well, this team only had one loss. Or this team only had two losses. And not looking into who you played, where you played them, and the strength of schedule overall. But having the guts to play that game is big.
So members of the SEC Network and ESPN are trying to lower the temperature, I guess, on the Arch Manning hype. As you heard Jordan Rogers say, he had Manning as the fifth best quarterback in the SEC. Heather Dinich has him the fourth best quarterback in the SEC behind Garrett Nussmeier, DJ Lagway, and Lenora Sellers. But with all due respect to Nussmeier, Lagway, Sellers, whichever quarterback Jordan Rogers also has ahead of Arch Manning, they're not Mannings. So there's going to be a lot of attention.
Well, even if his name were Jones, you know, and he was just a guy that did not have the family tree, he was the incredibly highly touted recruit. So there would be hype even if it wasn't the Mannings. But you put them together and you have what you have. I'm actually surprised people are putting him fourth.
You thought he would be higher or lower?
I thought he'd probably be a little bit higher, honestly.
Well, I think it's sort of, I think Jordan Rogers and Heather Dinich are trying to have more realistic expectations.
Right, and they're doing what their job is, which is to fuel the fire, to get people talking.
Again,
one person takes one side of the argument and one person takes another.
Arch Manning attempted 90 passes last season,
which is actually more than a lot of backups when you get down to it. He got to start a game against a lesser opponent. I think it was Mississippi State. He also got to play in a lot of second halves of blowouts, but he at least got out there and got a feel for getting in there and getting some experience. So 90 passes is more than some of the guys who end up on the list. There's some guys who are projected to be really good because they're on a good team and their expectations are high, but they didn't play nearly as much as Manning played last year.
So Manning against Mississippi State went 26 for 31 for 325 yards and two touchdowns. His numbers were pretty impressive. Keep in mind the level of competition. Again, Mississippi State, Louisiana Monroe, UT San Antonio, and Colorado State. He also threw six passes against Georgia.
He did go in there against Georgia for a couple
of
series.
Six passes against Florida. But overall, he completed 61 of 90 passes for 939 yards, 9 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, a QBR of 87.5. So impressive. But you also just have to keep in mind, again, the level of competition most of those passes came against.
Sure. And at the same time, I think we know he's going to be good. He's going to be really good. The question is, what happens in the big games that will define Texas's season? That's the drama.
And right off the hop, at Ohio State on Saturday, August 30th, they play at Florida on October 4th. They host Vanderbilt on November 1st. They're at Georgia November 15th. Their schedule isn't incredibly difficult in terms of their SEC games. They're at Florida, home to Oklahoma, at Kentucky, at Mississippi State, home to Vanderbilt, at Georgia, home to Arkansas, home to Texas A&M. It's a relatively easy schedule on paper.
Yeah, and I saw the SEC Network do their strength of schedule. Vanderbilt has the second hardest schedule in the country.
In the country?
Yes, based on ESPN's metrics. Now, they have their own metrics, so you might see a different website that's got something different. Vanderbilt's at the end of last year, which is the most accurate, when it's all said and done, and everybody's played their games, because strength of schedule now for this coming year is all speculative, right? It's all what we think it looks like now based on your criteria. Last year, Vanderbilt was in the top 10. This year, going in top three. Texas, I think that's a pretty good draw. I think that's a schedule that is just tough enough to where a committee would say, yeah, they play in the SEC. Yeah, they played Ohio State. You know, if they've lost two games, that should be enough to get them in the field. That's what you're looking for. You want the balance of having to be tough enough that you won't have it marked against you by a committee, but not so tough that it schedules you right out of the playoffs.
By the way, according to ESPN, the top 11 hardest strength of schedules in college football are all in top 11. The first non-SEC team that shows up is Wisconsin out of the Big Ten at number 12. The top 11 spots in strength of schedule are all taken by SEC teams. Do you happen to know the team ahead of Vanderbilt?
The team ahead of Vanderbilt?
Yes.
I forgot.
Florida.
Florida, and that was basically what they had to deal with last year, right? Florida had a really tough... Everybody's playing the same teams. So if you got a bad draw last year, unless everybody's completely different, you have the same draw this year. As we know with NIL, there is a little bit more of a wild card on the shuffling of rosters and how it's all going to shake out. Where's Ohio State in that, by the way?
Let's take a look.
The defending champions. They're playing Texas.
By the way, I did get a kick out of this. Robbie and Rexroad asked Paul Feinbaum about his Arch Manning take, and he said, quote, "You can never go broke being wrong about something," which I appreciate from Paul Feinbaum. He said, "Never be boring." So, quote, "You can never go broke being wrong about something," a direct quote from Paul Feinbaum.
Yeah.
Ohio State.
Jared Stillman certainly subscribes to that.
I was waiting for somebody to mention Jared. Ohio State is 18th in strength of schedule.
If you're Ohio State, that's perfect. Which means you should. It's just tough enough that if you win the league or come close to winning the league, you should be in the playoffs. That's all you want.
615-737-1025. Your outlook for Arch Manning as he begins his career as the starting quarterback of the Texas Longhorns. Arch Manning will address reporters today at SEC Media Days. Chase and Big Joe, of course, are at SEC Media Days. They will be there all week long. They're on from noon to 3. But your thoughts on Arch Manning? Is the hype train out of control for the young Manning? 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on that. But also coming up next, I have an important question for all you Vols fans out there. Tennessee also at SEC Media Days today. So I have an important question for all you Vols fans. And I'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan. Some breaking news from our fearless leader, Chase McCabe. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey will join Chase and Big Joe tomorrow at 12:45. So Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, will join Chase and Big Joe live from Atlanta at SEC Media Days tomorrow at 12:45. One texter on Arch Manning, Willie, on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Arch Manning is the most overrated quarterback in history. I can't wait to watch Mississippi State whip him. If he wasn't a Manning, he'd be playing at Louisiana. First of all, don't disrespect the Ragin' Cajuns. That would be Louisiana, right?
It would.
Okay. Don't disrespect the Ragin' Cajuns. One of the greatest nicknames in all of college sports.
Amen to that one.
But Manning would still be an excellent quarterback. The last name on the back of his jersey certainly doesn't hurt.
Don't we find it interesting? It's a Mississippi State person.
Yes.
That's the one game he played in last year and won.
Do I need to remind the texter of Arch Manning's stats against Mississippi State last year?
Did he not hear these? You just said these.
I did, and I'm happy to read them again. 26 for 31 for 325 yards and two touchdowns.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Pretty good.
Completion percentage of 83.9%.
Mississippi State fans try to not remember all those games that were bad for them.
Yes.
That's what they try to do.
As Roger Clemens would say, misremember.
Exactly.
I believe they've misremembered, is what he said to the Congress many times. Overhyped. There's a lot of definitions of overhyped because you cannot stop the Manning hype train. So by definition, he is going to be overhyped. Is he going to be good? I think that's a safe bet. The floor, he's going to be good. The question is how good and how early, because he's still pretty young. This is his third year in college. So let's not forget that. He's been patient. He sat an entire year and redshirted, right? And then last year was patiently the backup. And so here he is. So he should be ready to jump in and be very, very good with a good understanding of a very good pro offense with pretty good weapons around him from the get-go.
So, Willie, it feels just like yesterday that we were engulfed with the Iamaleh drama. You can call it the Iamaleh saga. If you want to.
I can't believe it took us till July to come up with that. Where were you back in?
I was with you, but.
But you didn't come up with this term. You should have.
I've had a few months to think about
it. Okay.
Nevertheless, it seems like just yesterday, we were all captivated by the Iamaleh drama or the Iamaleh saga. You decide which one you like more. Remember? Nico Iamaleava no-show Tennessee spring practice. A lot of reporting about his NIL demands. Tennessee and Iamaleava parted ways. He's now at UCLA. And I remember around that time as we were discussing that, because we discussed that a lot. A lot of Tennessee fans, I seem to recall, said, good on Tennessee. Good on Josh Heupel. Good on the football program for standing its ground. And hey, if next season is a bit disappointing, that's okay, because we didn't want Nico Iamaleava anyway. I want to ask Tennessee fans 3 months later, as football season is right around the corner, are you still feeling that way? How are Tennessee fans feeling about the quarterback situation now that the season is upon us? If this season is disappointing, are you still going to give the Vols some grace after what happened with Iamaleava? Or is it just easy to say that in April when college football season is still 4 months away? So that's what I want to hear from all of you at 615-737-1025. 3 months after Nico Iamaleava left, how are you feeling about the quarterback situation in Tennessee? Because there are some interesting choices, Willie. The presumed starting quarterback is Joey Aguilar, who was a standout at Appalachian State. Transferred to UT from UCLA. It was effectively a trade. Aguilar for Iamaleava. There's also former four-star recruit Jake Merklinger, but he's an inexperienced redshirt freshman. And there's former four-star recruit George McIntyre, a freshman who enrolled in January. So Aguilar, I think, has the inside track. There is going to be an open competition, of course, as Tennessee prepares for its season. But I want to know how Vols fans feel now, because it's easy to say, hey, if they go 7-5 next season, hey, at least we don't have to deal with Iamaleava anymore. But now that the season is upon us, I'm wondering how Vols fans feel now.
Well, I'm curious myself how the Vol fans feel. I mean, it is July. I can give you my assessment of what I think the interesting issue is here.
Sure.
It's a totally different profile of quarterback, because Nico's goal all along here has been, let me reach my potential and be a high draft pick. And more power to him. We can argue whether this is the right path for him to reach that potential, but this is what he wants to do. So I give him credit for not just being satisfied by getting all this money that he's gotten. I will always knock him for the lack of ethics, or maybe it's not him, maybe it's his family, his dad, all of that stuff, for going back on his word of what was essentially a guaranteed deal and, you know, reneging on that. That's what he did. But you're exchanging him, a guy who is a pro prospect, a prospective pro prospect, for a guy who is a college football quarterback. And that could look very, very different, and it could end up being surprisingly good, I think. And I couldn't tell you exactly. I haven't watched Aguilar play. But I look at Aguilar, I look at the profile. He's 23, so he's older. He's played a lot of college football. He's played 25 games. He's thrown 850 college passes. He's thrown for 56 touchdown passes. He's played in a program that's had success. Now, they didn't win a ton while he was there. They won some. But sometimes you can win, even in the SEC, with a guy who's not a pro prospect, just a good college football player. And I don't know what that's going to look like with this particular kid. I couldn't tell you. And it was a hasty decision. It's kind of like Tennessee had to go with what was out there. So I don't know if they would have chosen Aguilar. They kind of had to take him.
As I said, it was a trade, basically, because Aguilar left UCLA.
And not a fair trade. Not one where, like, hey, we like Aguilar. You like Nico. We're kind of, let's swap. It wasn't like that, right?
A marriage of convenience, perhaps?
Perhaps. You know, you had to pick from what was there at the grocery store. Here are the quarterbacks on the shelf. We haven't stocked the shelf.
Were they shopping in the bin? We like to talk about the bin.
I think the bin, there weren't many things in the bin. not a lot of quarterbacks in the bin. Especially, I saw a list one day that had Mike Wright, who played for Vanderbilt a couple years ago. I was like, he's still playing in college football? He's played.
Where is he
now? I was like,
now?
That's the bargain bin. And I love Mike Wright, but.
He's at Northwestern?
He was at one point. I don't know if he's still there. Is he still there?
He says East Carolina.
Yeah.
That's what it says now.
So
Google says
let's
it,
get
buddy.
The latest. Yeah, because he was in the portal that's at the time.
He
was at Northwestern.
He traded one shade of purple for another shade of purple?
Apparently so.
Going from Northwestern to ECU, he must like the color purple.
Okay. There's probably some things in his wardrobe that could fit.
Yes.
You know, as long as it didn't have the logo on there.
True.
I'd get away with it. But that's what I want to see. Hendon Hooker, basically, at the time, was not a pro prospect when he was at Tennessee. He wasn't the starter, but he was older, and he had played a lot of college football. And lo and behold, he was a really good fit for the system. So can they catch lightning in a bottle twice? Because they stumbled upon Hooker. Fair to say?
I would say so.
And I think that is what we're finding out, is that's how you win in the transfer portal, is you find the right guy. It's not, hey, we got Michigan's backup. This Michigan guy, he just needed to play. He needed to play somewhere. He lost out to this other McDonald's All-American or high school five-star recruit, and now we get him. That's not always the best guy. It's finding the right guy, whether he played for Appalachian State, East Carolina, or anywhere in between. That's what we're seeing a lot in not just football, but all across college sports. That's where these GMs, I think, are making their money.
By the way, Mike Wright at East Carolina, his third school in 3 years,
right?
From Mississippi State to Northwestern, right? To ECU.
You're not even counting the Commodores.
Okay, four schools in 4 years. Four schools in 4 years for Mike Wright. 615-737-1025. Okay, Vols fans. 3 months after the Iamaleh drama, which I'm now going to use, I regret that I did not come up with this 3 months ago, but 3 months after the Nico Iamaleh drama, how are you feeling about the quarterback situation now that the season is upon us, and how are you feeling about the Tennessee season again now that it is upon us? 615-737-1025. Also, Robbie Stanley asked Paul Feinbaum about Tennessee's quarterback situation this morning. We'll play that for you as well. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.